This is Citizens Council Forum, America's number one public affairs program, where prominent Americans report to the nation on important issues. This week, the series of discussions is presented coast to coast by Citizens Council Forum, a nonprofit educational corporation, with the cooperation of public-spirited broadcasters who share our belief that Americans must be informed to remain free. Now, from Washington, here is the producer of Citizens Council Forum, Dick Morphew.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome to Citizens Council Forum. We're very happy to have on the program today Dr. Medford Evans. Dr. Evans is a consultant to the Citizens Councils of America. Before becoming a full-time staff member of the council movement, he was for many years a professor at leading Southern colleges. Dr. Evans received his Ph.D. from Yale University. During World War II, he served as chief of security training for the Atomic Energy Commission. Dr. Evans, today I'd like to discuss with you the August 28th March on Washington. It's been subjected to all sorts of news analysis and editorial comment already. I'd like to have your reaction to it.
I think the outstanding impression, Dick, is one of a basic absurdity in the whole thing. The idea of all these highly privileged people getting together under favored circumstances with the full support of the federal government and all the District of Columbia police, the Army and Navy, the support, the complete cooperation of all the networks, $15 million worth of publicity at the very least, and they do all this representing themselves as an oppressed people and chant that they want freedom now. It's preposterous.
Well, if they weren't already free, how could they have marched?
That's a point well taken. Incidentally, it's interesting to see that the various news magazines and editorial writers, including particularly those that were highly sympathetic to the march, had a hard time saying just what the thing did mean. And as one news magazine said, wherein lay the triumph of the march? Civil rights leaders themselves had a hard time putting it into words. I should think they might have, for it is very difficult to put a basically absurd operation like this into words.
Ostensibly, it was to drum up support for civil rights legislation, but even the leaders of the so-called march admit that they didn't change any votes.
I think that they knew in advance that they would not change any votes. How could such a demonstration change a vote?
Then what was the real purpose of the march?
Who can say? Perhaps there was no rational purpose. On the other hand, there is a possible rational purpose that they couldn't begin yet to declare openly, and that might account for the apparent absurdity. Let's put it this way. These people clearly are individually free, and yet they repeatedly chanted this slogan, freedom now, freedom now, freedom. Well, freedom does have another meaning from individual freedom, and that is the political independence of a group. If this was a group demanding political independence for the American Negro, then of course it did have a real meaning, but they were not prepared to come out and say so. There is, by the way, a good deal of persuasive evidence that this is what is in the back of the minds of many of these leaders, political independence for the American Negro.
Would this be something similar to what's been happening in Africa in recent years?
It would be quite similar. The situation is altogether different, for of course in the African situation you have areas where there's an overwhelming Negro population. In some cases the white population is statistically negligible. And in this country, 9/10 of the people are white. And thus, of course, we may say that a move for a Negro political independence in this country could not conceivably succeed. This does not mean, however, that someone might not undertake such a move, for in the attempt to bring about this preposterous demand, the realization of this preposterous demand, they might succeed in destroying things in the present American way of life, which for reasons best known to themselves, they wish to destroy. It's this sort of potentiality that causes the communist movement to be so active within the Negro movement and in the judgment of many people, including myself, to be the most important motivating force in the whole thing.
Dr. Evans, even the so-called liberal press, which supported the march from the very outset, has been commenting since the August 28th March on Washington actually occurred that it appeared to be the beginning of something, but no one seems quite sure what it is the beginning of. Have you some idea on that?
I do have an idea. It fits in with what we've been saying so far. It could be the beginning of a whole series of revolutionary movements, not necessarily confined to Negroes. A nationally syndicated columnist has pointed out that one of the leaders of this Negro march is now suggesting that other groups, that the unemployed, perhaps as a class, might march in the streets and demonstrate and demand jobs. Then this same columnist goes on to point out that this is the historic method of class revolution by both fascist and communist leaders in Europe during the past generation.
Haven't we seen some of this bypassing of the channels of legal authority already throughout the nation in the various uprisings and mass demonstrations in the South and more recently in the North as well?
We have indeed, and the most alarming feature of them is that in many cases, the very people in our society who stand to lose the most have cooperated with this thing. I have in mind the setting up of the various biracial committees throughout the South. Representatives of the federal government will go to a southern city where Negro demonstrations have been staged. And in that city, instead of dealing with the established authority, the mayor, the police commissioner, and other officials, or instead of dealing with the state authorities, the governor, and so on, they will set up a volunteer biracial committee with perhaps 18 or 20 people who simply come forward and say, yes, I'll be glad to represent the white people, or I'll be glad to represent the Negroes. And these groups have no legal status whatsoever. And yet the Justice Department of the United States will deal with them and will stand ready to bring in the full power of the United States Armed Services to support the agreements which these self-appointed biracial committees set up. It's very interesting to observe how closely this follows after the pattern of the so-called Soviets in the early days of the Russian Revolution.
And then don't they take the position, these biracial committees, once they have been established, that anyone who refuses to negotiate with them in good faith is certainly to be roundly condemned?
Indeed they do. This is an illustration of what a blatant usurpation of authority these biracial committees constitute. And of course it is exasperating to note the tone of moral superiority which they assume when it is they who are acting illegally.
Let's get back to this August 28th March on Washington for a moment, Dr. Evans. In your opinion, what did the march accomplish?
I think the chief thing it accomplished was to alert many Americans to the danger of this revolutionary movement. In some ways, the march could be considered a flop. It did not accomplish for the revolution certain things which theoretically it might have done. It did not have much zip to it. I think that dramatically it was a disappointment. And this simply shows that even before the march occurred, the publicity connected with it had alerted enough people so that there began to be reservations. You recall that the AFL-CIO Executive Committee refused to endorse the march, although Vice President Walter Reuther was there. And this means that the leaders of the labor movement thought, well, this thing is going to backfire and we better stay out of it. Now, because of this advance backing and filling, neither the harm nor the backfire was quite as great as might have been expected. But on the whole, I think that we can say that the march alerted many Americans who otherwise thought there was nothing to worry about to the dangers of this kind of revolutionary movement in our country today.
How have these Americans responded? I know our mail has been heavy. Have they been acting in any other ways?
Well, you find increased activity all over the country in the formation of responsible groups of citizens You see, if the revolutionary forces are going to set up all kinds of organizations, as they have done, then to counteract this, it's necessary for Americans who wish to preserve the established order to come together also in voluntary associations to strengthen the American way of life.
You've been active in organizing quite a number of new citizens' councils around the nation recently, haven't you, Dr. Evans?
I have attempted to do that, yes, sir.
And would you say that interest in local organizations is mounting on the part of the people?
It has mounted very rapidly throughout this summer when the so-called revolution has been played up so much. The requests for us to come and help organize have greatly increased. Incidentally, let me talk about an illustration of how valuable these organizations can be. Last April, there was a revolutionary attempt in Greenwood, Mississippi, to overthrow the local laws and ways of administering those laws. And not only was this attempt completely frustrated and the local society saved, but it was done in a completely peaceful and orderly manner, so peacefully and in such an orderly manner that even the New York Times, which is in general hostile to the customs of Greenwood, Mississippi, said that in Greenwood, order was preserved through the good offices of the Citizens' Council. This is an example of what organization can do. For, of course, Greenwood has had one of the earliest Citizens' Councils in the country.
How is most of this new organization taking place? Are groups of people getting together in their own communities and then later calling on you and on other organizers for help?
Yes, that is the typical way. Now, the word passes in many ways. Anyone can write to this office for assistance in organizing a local council, and we answer those requests just as rapidly as we can. We have more than usual now, but we can say that the American spirit is rising and that the people are organizing to defend states' rights and racial integrity.
Dr. Evans, thank you very much for being with us today. Our guest on today's edition of Citizens Council Forum has been Dr. Medford Evans, consultant to the Citizens Councils of America. Join us again next week at the same time when we'll be back with another program in your Citizens Council Forum series. Till then, Dick Morphew speaking coast to coast, saying thanks a lot for being with us. So long, everybody.
Citizens Council Forum is dedicated to the preservation of our American tradition of freedom. If you agree that individual liberty and constitutional government must be preserved, if you want to do something positive and worthwhile to help protect our freedom, then we want to hear from you. Just write to Citizens Council, Jackson, Mississippi. We'll be happy to send you, without obligation, literature showing how you can help. Address your card or letter to Citizens Council, Jackson, Mississippi. America's number one public affairs series is presented coast to coast each week by Citizens Council Forum, a nonprofit educational corporation, assisted by a grant from the Mississippi State Sovereignty Commission, an official agency of the state of Mississippi. Join us next week for another informative discussion and remind your friends to tune in. It's time to take a stand. By working together, we can and will safeguard our freedom.